Who is this marauder, Captain?
I don't know.
I am Vindicta, vengeance personified. At last, free man, I will bathe in your blood.
Oh boy, somebody's really laying it on thick.
Behold, my three henchmen of the the Vinpocalypse, Tendi, my savage warrior queen, who comes from a long line of thieving Orion pirates.
Yeah, nobody messes with Orions. I'll steal from anyone and never give it back. Theft!
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the very cinematic bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, fighting to the death on a rickety catwalk.
That old chestnut. Of course, a classic of Star Trek films of the past. And why are we talking about Star Trek films? Because we're going to tackle episode 9 of Lower Decks, Crisis Point, which has, you know, just one or two homages to the film world.
Really? That totally went over my head, Cam. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, but Cam, before I spill my guts on everything about this episode, we do have a special guest, a returning guest, one Taylor Ramone. So stick around for that. She's going to be coming to us in about, I don't know, my best guess, 45 minutes. Sorry, sir. I don't want to bury the lead here. This is my favorite episode so far this season of Star Trek Lower Decks. This is the most audacious. This is the one that's most subversive. This is where they're willing to break format just the way that I have been hoping all these new Star Trek series have been willing to do. I got some good laughs, but it didn't really rest on the laughs. Ultimately, I also got like a great story that told me something about Mariner, something very deep, something very dark. And there's like emotional punches, gut punches throughout this episode. I absolutely love this one. I put this number one so far for me so far in season one of Star Trek Lower Decks.
I think I still come down on the last episode and Cupid's Errant Arrow as being my favorites of the season. But this was the high water mark by far for animation on this show. I thought this episode was just like a holy smokes, like this was just like running laps around even what they've done in the past and really showcasing what we could hope of more for in the future of Lower Decks.
Yeah, Cupid's Errant Arrow, we both love it. I enjoyed last week's episode as well. I think you liked it a little bit more, and I'll just kind of reiterate what I said. It's just like, yeah, a lot of cool things happened. There were a lot of good laughs, but I kept ask myself, what does it all add up to with regards to the story? I didn't have to ask myself this question in this episode. Like, there was a full flowing story there throughout the entire time, and I learned something about Mariner. I really felt this kind of emotional journey, and the episode kept surprising me. Like, every step of the way, when they're doing different things that we can get into that I would just never expect to see in Star Trek. The closest we ever got was on Star Trek Enterprise with Black and White Movie Night. Cam, this adventure took it a whole new level, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Movie Night was always a bit of an embarrassment because, boy, when they would sit in those movie nights, it didn't even try to convince you that they were actually watching a movie. It was like
they're all in their uniforms eating like dry popcorn.
But it's like the room is just slightly darkened and the sound you're hearing from the movie is completely fake sounding. Like, it does not sound like people watching a real movie. It's like, oh my God, what am I? Oh, okay. It was, do you remember that episode of Seinfeld? It's actually not a good episode. The one with the barber. The one where there's like the battle between the barber and his father,
it's
or
like
something?
The Edward Scissorhands homage in that one.
Yes, and they're watching Edward Scissorhands, and all you hear is like clipping sounds and like whimsical music.
That's kind of funny in retrospect, though.
Oh, it's funny, but that's what Enterprise would do playing it straight, where like what you're hearing is like, that is not a real movie.
No. But like, I'm in awe in what you literally have like, what, like 90% of this episode it has kind of this affectation of film stock. They do, what is it, like 16 by 8 ratio versus kind of the standard widescreen that we have developed for our TVs. Like, they went all out. And Cam, that love scene, that homage to the motion picture, and what you really have the crew just ogling and making love with their eyes to their beloved starship, like, that might be the best kind of like shout out to the motion picture we can ever hope for in Star Trek canon.
I just have one question, Tyler, before I touch on that sequence. Who is this show for?
It's for me and it's for you. Let's just be honest here.
Because the whole time I'm watching the sequence, which I thought was just beautifully put together, and I'd always wondered if we would see some sort of spoof of this now really famous sequence where they circle the Enterprise in the motion picture for 15 minutes. It seemed like something rife for parody, and I think they did a beautiful job doing it. They did it to the best of their ability, and I appreciated that this episode was like a minute longer or so than the previous episodes, because that minute was needed for the sequence. But as I'm watching it, I'm just like, I really have questions as to who this show is for.
I think it's for the writers. I think that's the best thing to do. Like, I kind of hate it when I'm watching a TV series and you can tell the writers are sitting there and they're telling stories and it's essentially distilled down to, well, maybe fans would like this, or, hey, you know what? Fans would not like this, but let's kind of like rile them up. I think these writers on Lower Decks, they're sitting there and like, oh, we would like this. And I think that's what you need to do. You've got to tell a story that you want to tell. And I think that's been a bit of our issue with say something like Star Trek Picard and at times Star Trek Discovery. Do you think honestly they're sitting in the Star Trek Picard writer's room and they're saying like, yeah, this is a story that I am really invested in?
No, it's a lot like the difference between Christopher Nolan writing Batman versus the DC Universe writing Batman, where it's just like, what do we give fans they're going to like? And then it comes out and it feels kind of generic and not that interesting, versus what Nolan did, which felt like it was doing some compelling and outside the box. And that's what Lower Decks feels like to me. Like, even in episodes that I'm not necessarily as crazy about, they are doing Star Trek stories that I've never seen before and bringing elements in that I've never seen before. Whereas, yeah, like a show like Picard feels kind of like, you know, thin gruel.
Well, they're able to break the format in a way that I don't think that Star Trek Picard was willing to. Like, look at an episode like Stardust City Rag. I thought they thought...
Oh, it broke the format, Tyler. It broke the format good.
They're like, let's have a fun caper with the crew. And that was just this most miserable episode of Star Trek that I can think of like sitting through in like the last like 25 years or something like that. I would take, what was it? The Quark
These
episode.
Are the Voyages?
No, oh. Not, oh, you know what?
You might want to backpedal on that one.
It's either Prophet and Lace or these or the Voyages. I would rather watch those than say Stardust City Rag once again. And I'm just like, I'm just scratching my head thinking like, what? Why would somebody like make that into an episode where I watch something like Crisis Point? And I'm just, I'm in awe as a fan of cinema. I'm in awe as a fan of Star Trek. I agree. If maybe the point you're making is, you know, if you drop like a newbie in on this episode, they're just kind of like going, huh, I don't get it. But right. I don't care. I honestly don't care at this point.
Oh, I don't care. I mean, I enjoyed the episode as well. But it is a thing that I keep wondering of like, what is it like to tune into a show like this where... you can follow the story, but you don't understand any of the references that are being made and a lot of the punchlines.
So who is subscribing to, say, CBS All Access or Crave? And Crave is how it airs here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And sitting through or skipping through like 8 episodes and then just landing on this one in particular. Like, I don't think that's a huge concern for the writers.
I think that's a good point, actually. I mean, I think they're more likely, and this is such a small market that I don't even want to give it any importance, but in Canada, it does air on TV, so someone might come across it on broadcast TV, but that's not the situation in the rest of the world, so that's only, a very small demographic of viewers of this show.
And in all fairness, the television it airs on is the CTV sci-fi channel, so if they're tuning into the sci-fi channel, they'll probably go along with this. There's enough garbage on that. I think this would kind of like break through the mold, right?
How dare you, sir? They have fine programming on that channel.
There was a period of time where I think the Sci-Fi Channel like really got hardcore into like professional wrestling, which I found fascinating at the time.
I remember when it launched, I was so excited because I'm like, oh my God, a themed channel. Like, what could be on this? And at that point, when they first launched it, they just basically bought a lot of like grade Z science fiction movies and just threw them on there, and they were all super boring. And it was like, oh, this is the Space Channel and this is awful.
Well, it allowed you to enjoy Leprechaun 4. So there you go.
I would have pleaded for Leprechaun 4 in those days on that channel.
Okay. Well, let's get into the nitty gritty of this. Of course, you know, we have Mariner messing up a, I'm guessing it's a first contact or at least interference with the development of a couple of sentient societies here. And she's sent to therapy, which I'm intrigued by who is better as a counselor, you know, a Troy, a Dax, or Miglivo, I think, or Miglivo.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I did love the fact that this chicken-looking doctor was dressed in like the 1980s sort of like cliched therapist outfit, in which like there's like the jacket, no tie. He's got like the the mock turtleneck on, but he's wearing a comm badge. I think that's an ode to how Troy was able to wear like her regular clothing, but have like a comm badge on as well.
I'm sure that's part of it. I also did like when Mariner said, like, it's the 80s. We don't have like psychological issues anymore. And so maybe that was part of the joke as well, cutting from someone saying it's the 80s to a very 80s looking psychologist.
I dig. Also, I got a couple laughs out of just his constant references to food about like how, hey, Mariner, maybe we need to cook up a solution to this problem that you can marinate in. And then by the time we get to the end, we have Freeman getting annoyed because Counselor Miglivo is saying like, oh, yeah, you're in a bit of a pickle, aren't you?
And we should say he was actually voiced by Paul F. Tompkins, who's, I think, very familiar to fans of comedy podcasting. And he's also, is he the co-host of the new Star Trek podcast, the official one?
I believe he is. I've only listened to one episode. Props to that show. I think we were a little skeptical of whether or not another official podcast would be interesting. I don't know. I listened to episode one. It featured Ben Stiller as a guest. I was intrigued. Tawny Newsom, who plays Mariner, of course, she is kind of the go-to host there, and she is very obviously a fan of the show. Cam, I will prove to you her fan chops. Guess who her first Star Trek crush is?
Okay. I'm trying to think of like her age and everything. Okay. I feel like the way you're setting this up, it's not expected. It's not like Wesley Crusher or something, or Riker. Oh man, this is tough.
You'll know it when I say it, though. You'll be like, oh, this is a real fan, just based on maybe our other friends' answers that they've given us over the years.
It's not that random like ensign from Voyager, is it?
Wow. Mega burn against one of our friends, Stefan Estanilo, who his first Star Trek crush was like that random Bajoran ensign who appeared in, I think, 1.5 episodes.
Something like that. Yeah.
I won't leave you on Tetrix. Do you want to give like one guess, or do you want me to just get to it?
Sure. Tom Paris? I don't know. I got nothing.
Dr. Julian Bashir.
That tells me
she's like a legit fan. Like they're even like talking about how she was sending texts out saying like, I'm a little buzzed, but I'm watching Deep Space Nine. Like, it's like she's sitting there like rewatching Deep Space Nine. So like, props to her. I hope you guys don't unsubscribe from us and only subscribe to them. But I would say that the new official Star Trek podcast is worth a listen, at least based on episode one. You get Ben Stiller. He's giving a lot of cool insights into his own love for the original series. He never really kind of went beyond the original series, but he was talking about stuff like the cable guy and how you have that huge, huge, amazing homage to A Mock Time in it. And he's just kind of discussing it as a director and everything.
Mm-hmm, of course. And his production company is called Red Hour Productions after Return of the Archons. Yeah.
Oh, they mentioned that as well in this podcast. Yeah. So props to them. But so, Cam, did you ever think, I keep saying this every effing week, did you ever think we would get a Da Vinci holodeck shout out in Star Trek yet again in this situation? We did get one like a little while ago, did we not?
Yeah. I will say that the Da Vinci appearance was quickly overruled in my mind by the Zahn reference. That was where I went, oh my God, are they making a Zahn reference?
Wait, I that may have gone over my head. What was the Zahn reference?
Yes, Mariner refers to Boimler as a Zahn, and he goes, and when her movie's just starting, and he goes, who's Zahn? And she goes, it doesn't matter, you're not going to make the final cut or something like that anyways.
Oh, snap. I don't think, and by Zahn, we're talking about X-O-N, Zahn. He was supposed to be kind of the replacement for Spock in Star Trek The Next Phase. Holy moly. So Zahn is canon. Zahn is, after 41 years, Zahn is canon.
Yeah, I thought my ears were playing tricks on me the first time through because the characters do talk very quickly. And I went back and I'm like, oh my God, they're dropping a Zahn reference, which once again circles me back to who is this show for?
I don't care. I'm just like, I'm loving it. The other thing that kind of, I don't think it was an explicit shout out, but the whole crux of this episode, essentially, Boimler has this holodeck program based on all the personal logs that he snapped from everybody on the crew. And tune in episode it made me think of, Cam.
Booby trap?
That's a good guess. I'm talking about Aquiel, in which we have Geordi LaForge watching 14 hours worth of Aquiel's personal logs because he thought that this officer aboard that subspace transmissions relay was dead. So he figured, yeah, I'm just going to stare at her personal logs for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that there's been ongoing dialogue about amongst fans, is the whole idea of recreating real people on the holodeck and the moral implications of doing so. And I thought this episode had a fun time kind of grappling with that, but kind of dealing with it, like, honestly, in the sense of that Mariner is pretty much unhinged throughout this process and other characters are acknowledging that.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because the unhinged part, like, it threw me for a loop. Like, we've never seen Mariner unhinged like this before. And I just kept wondering in my head, like, where is this going? Where is this going? I ultimately love that they did incorporate that whole, well, these simulations are all based on personal logs. Boimler got a simulation in which Mariner, in the simulated form on the holodeck, is proving how loyal she is to the ship, the crew, her mother, what it takes to stand up. That's not how I thought this episode was going to end. And her, like the real Mariner fighting against virtual Mariner. I just found that to be just kind of a fascinating thing I'd never expect to see from this series.
I was having flashback to that episode Faces, where we get two B'Elanna Torreses.
Yes, and your favorite part of the episode, in which we have the Vidian rip the Starfleet officer's face off and wear it like he's all good Hannibal Lecter.
I was spared that in this episode, but I wouldn't have minded it. That would be an amazing in-joke, too. But yeah, like, I thought that was a fun solution to the problem. I did have moments, though, before that reveal, where I was thinking, like, are they taking this a little too far with Mariner? Like, there's a certain point where you kind of get that uncomfortable vibe of, like, I feel like they're making this character too mean-spirited.
In that, I think her captain is totally correct in sending her to therapy, in that, like, she is kind of unhinged in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. And not in the Russell Crowe way.
Nobody's going to get that reference except for me and maybe like three or four other listeners. But I guess, people, if you're looking for a pandemic film, Russell Crowe's Unhinged is now on premium VOD.
That's right.
But okay, Cam, let me ask you this. Okay, is the depiction of the holodeck here, in which, you know, Mariner just kind of treats it like a first-person shooter, is it kind of how, you know, like, you know, the parents of the 1990s just assumed, you know, like Wolfenstein and Duke Nukem were back in the day?
Oh, I think so, yeah. there was a lot of fear about those first person shooter games, especially in the wake of Columbine as well. I think that is something that if a holodeck happened now and you had people going in there and doing, violent things or whatever, immoral things, people would get scared once again. So it's something that I think maybe it's good that it feels a little uncomfortable in this episode because we're grappling with this concept through the characters.
And I don't think that they were valorizing at all what Mariner was doing. I think the writers, the creators of the show, I think they were judging her. And I don't think that we were meant to just go, rah, rah, yeah, shoot your senior officers.
I think when she's holding up the pieces of Shax's ear to Tendi, that we are not supposed to be on board with this character.
I'm sorry, but when Tendi said, some of his ear is still on it, that might be my favorite line of the entire episode.
But Tendi is very much the conscience of this episode. And in sometimes in funny ways where she's like, act like those classic Orions. And it's like,
No, like she was put on the spot. And then just my favorite line was she was just like, yeah, I'm a pirate. Theft. And she's like, look, some of us Orions, we have not been pirates for almost 5 years. Okay. That was another great line.
Yeah. And so, I felt like that character fulfilled a very important role there because you are right. Like, if you take Tendi out of this situation and just have Mariner running rampant through the ship, I don't know that the message is sent as clearly to the viewer.
Yeah, it would have felt more like Star Trek Discovery, in which they depict decapitated baby heads once again in a much more valorous sort of way.
Sure. Yeah. Or dwelling on the death of Ichib.
I don't put that GIF, which has been tattooed into my brain at this point, back in there. But but going back to that Tendi remark about the ear, there's another moment that I want to bring up where we have this film gives the movie, which is Crisis Point: Rise of Vindicta, which I think that's a great title. Do you notice at the end of the credits it says, and starring Winger Bingston Jr.? I was like, okay. And he quickly meets his demise when they crush his body after he gets a compliment for his one-man show.
Right. Okay.
Didn't know what to make of that. But one of the things that I've kind of been pushing for over the last couple of weeks is giving the show a bit more of a harder edge when it comes to the humor. I think we got that with the Bingston death, kind of a typical red shirt sort of death. We also got that with regards to Shax's head getting blown off to the point where there's a piece of ear on his earring. I'm okay with that sort of stuff. I don't know what it is about me where I grimace at the violence that they have in, say, Picard or Discovery, but this sort of stuff, I'm okay with it. It's not that I don't have humanity, but I do find this stuff kind of humorous.
I did think it was a little weird, though, when she's talking about, let's go torture Dr. Tana. And she's like, no, really torture her. And I'm like, okay.
She's unhinged.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I thought, this episode is just in terms of, you think of the opportunities they have with this sort of animation and what they can do to show what is basically a con character running loose on the ship. And I just think they had so much fun doing it, whether it is the Shax, taking him down with the exploding Borg head, or, that character you referenced being crushed in the hallway underneath that pod that reminded me a little bit of Star Trek Beyond, where you had the various swarm ships firing these pods into the Enterprise. There was a lot of nods to these movies, but also just original ideas that really made this whole thing feel very cinematic.
Yeah, and speaking of which, another shout out to the cinematic universe there, but we got another saucer crash. This to me seemed like a total shout out to Generations, but they didn't just repeat it. I love how the idea of them putting the saucer on its kind of perpendicular angle and having it roll down the planets, as opposed to it gliding to the planet like we saw in Generations.
My instant reaction is, oh, this is Generations, but it felt just different enough that it was more just paying homage to the concept of the Enterprise crashing in movies.
Well, we've seen that in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. We saw that in Generations. We saw that in Star Trek Beyond. We saw that in Star Trek Voyager in Timeless. We've now seen that in Lower Decks. What takes the cake for you in terms of Starship crash landings?
The best one, I think, will be, I mean, I don't know that it'll ever be beaten, which is Star Trek III. You know, that one is just, it meant so much because it had never happened before. And the way it staged with the crew on the ground, looking up, seeing it burn up in the atmosphere. Just, I mean, the visual of that is incredible.
We have not been on the receiving end of like a bad depiction of any of these crash landings, though. I mean, that's just my opinion. But like all of them, I've kind of been in awe. And like, I feel as if the creators do take it seriously if they have to depict this.
Well, it's a big event because the Enterprise means more to people than at least a significant chunk of even the characters on the various shows and movies.
Sure. Yeah. I hope you're not like dismissing like the vast importance of one, you know, say Harry Kim.
I don't know that audiences are as moved by, say, the death of Harry Kim in a movie as they are by the Enterprise crashing.
If Harry Kim gets to die in a Star Trek movie, Garrett Wong will be a happy, happy camper cashing that check.
But not when it comes time for the sequel.
Fair enough. Other stuff that is just making me laugh, though. Boimler decides to, you know, play himself in the simulation, so his role in the movie goes to Shempo. Cam, can we resurrect Shempo somehow?
I mean, how many Shemps were there in the original Three Stooges?
Just one.
Yeah, just one. I know they had a couple. There were other Three Stooges that were added later, other characters that were kind of these knockoffs. But Shemp was the key one. I don't know if a lot of people understand Shemp humor at this point in time. But it is also a go-to of director Sam Raimi, who did the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies and the Evil Dead movies. He, if you look at his credits, will often credit fake Shemps in his movies as people that were like stand-ins and stuff like that for actors.
Yeah, but just even the comedy like involved with this, like it's super broad stuff that, you know, like a second grader is going to get. It works for me. Just give somebody a dumb voice and you'll make me laugh.
Whenever you have a character.
Stop making me laugh.
Whenever you have a character impersonate another character badly, it's usually pretty funny. It's, you know, it's kind of like the Homer Simpson even just saying the, you know, my name is Mr. Burns, you know.
Remember he did an impression of Marge in one episode? Yeah.
Yeah, like anytime it's like a bad impression or something, it's inherently funny.
Best impression in all of Star Trek, though, still has to go to one Jerry Ryan depicting the Holodoctor in Body and Soul on Star Trek Voyager, though.
Is there even a second place, though?
I can't even think of who would come close, if there is. Unless we're counting Quark as Kira in Meridian.
Oh, dear Lord.
Is that the next closest, Cam?
I'm trying to think of like scenes where characters did good impressions of other Star Trek characters on the shows or movies. I don't think that's happened, right?
Wasn't there an episode where like Riker had to? Oh no, you know what? I'm thinking of Gambit, in which didn't like Riker go by the name Jean-Luc or something like that when he ended up on the pirate ship?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Yeah.
That's not really a Jean-Luc Picard impersonation or anything.
No, the closest that I can kind of come up with was the actress Susan Smith, who played the imposter that took over William Shatner's body in the episode Turnabout Intruder. Like that fake Kirk was that she did was a good impression.
Yeah, it's a horrible episode, but I do give props to both those actors for trying to emulate their respective counterparts. It's a very problematic performance still on Shatner's part in how he's depicting a woman. But the thing is, Shatner is always an actor who just goes for it. So all I can say is like, good effort, sir.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, Susan Smith killed it, and I called her the fake Kirk, but she was playing the real Kirk.
That's so. True. That's true. So it makes sense that Kirk would seem like himself in another person's body.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk about the whole, like, the Freeman exchange between her and Mariner, like simulation Freeman and Mariner going up to her and saying, like, you never believed in me, simulation Freeman. I don't know you. She's, and Mariner's like, that's exactly right. Like, that to me is like revealing stuff. Like, I like that you understand more of Mariner's own psyche, her motivation, why she might be hyper competent when she puts her mind to it, but she's got these like mommy issues and they just keep coming to the forefront for all, you know, 9 episodes of the season.
And also we see that Mariner has anger issues.
Yes.
And you get in this episode, and I think we've seen a little bit in the past, that Freeman has some, maybe perhaps, anger issues as well, that obviously with her age have maybe come more under control and focused. But I do wonder what a young Freeman was like.
Probably, maybe, look, oftentimes, like, the people that annoy you the most are the people that are most similar to you. And mm-hmm. both those characters might just remind each other of one another.
Yeah, and in a mother-daughter situation, well, you know, that's a good dramatic shorthand to have the two characters have these similarities and have conflict over that. And I, especially in an animated show, which doesn't necessarily have the nuance you would get in an hour-long drama, I think it works really well.
Yeah. What did you think about Boimler finally finding out the truth? I never really thought of that in that, yes, it is still a secret, and they have been keeping that secret throughout the entire run of the series so far.
Yeah, that never occurred to me as a secret that was going to continue through the show. Like, it never, I guess I just never once thought of other characters learning this or potentially learning this information. I thought the reveal was amazing and that it really did just break Boimler's mind.
No, I love the scene where he's in the ready room and, you know, Freeman's just looking at him and she's like, what is going on with Mariner and you? Mariner's hot. No, she's nasty. And he just like runs away. Like, I just love the delivery of that line there.
Well, and also the entire conceit of this episode was that he's created this program to run simulations to determine the perfect answers to all of these questions on this interview and how to impress Freeman. And so we go through this entire half hour and the interview pays off with that.
Yes, the poor guy. I was entertained myself, but Boimler's got to work on his programming skills if this is what ends up. Look, if you're scraping someone's personal logs, a violation, and it might just get you into a little bit of trouble, sir.
And, you know, I talked a couple of weeks ago about how it feels like Boimler is a character who's set up so that all of his dreams will be crushed for comedic value for the audience. And that's continued through this episode.
Yeah, I can believe it. Do you think he gets promoted at all through the run of the series?
Maybe the final episode. I don't know that I really need to see it.
Well, I'm just wondering if you can still be a lower deck if you're, say, Lieutenant Junior Grade, right?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But does that kind of ruin... So I think there's two threads that we have to think of. Is the premise of the series versus character development and whether there is potential for these characters to kind of evolve in a way. And I think they're setting Mariner up to be able to evolve, get over a lot of these anger issues, and maybe deal with things with her mother. We haven't really seen her interact with her father yet at this point, despite that episode one view screen talk between Freeman. But I don't know. So I just wonder if there's like a little bit of leeway that some of the characters have to kind of ascend to higher ranks, much as how we're, you know, watching, you know, half the cast is the senior crew, and maybe new lower ranks, lower decks come into the series as it goes on for hopefully a couple more years.
It's quite possible. There's also the issue of as the show keeps going, and we'll see how many seasons it goes, but at a certain point it becomes weird if the characters are like lower decks in season 5 still.
Yeah. And I also wonder how they're going to play with time. If you go back to TNG, it is kind of interesting in that if you do the math and work out how they do star dates, time doesn't necessarily move, you know, in the same way that it does in the real world. It is like I'm forgetting the exact example, but I think a lot of people were pointing to when Molly O'Brien was born and when they established her age later on in Deep Space Nine, and they could do some math based on star dates and say like, okay, so not necessarily like one season equals exactly 1 year, but I think they tried to keep it consistent with that gauge for the most part. But I know what you're saying. Like, it could be 5 years into their journey. It's going to be a little weird if all four of these ensigns are still ensigns at this point. But actually, no, Cam. Look, Mayweather, Hoshi, Sato, and Harry Kim all had to deal with that. So I don't know.
That's true. But the show wasn't like Enterprise wasn't like defined by their ranks on the show, whereas this one, it kind of is. And characters are constantly looking for opportunities to impress their superiors and get advancement. So it's kind of weird if you get to season six and Boimler is still talking about trying to get an interview or whatever.
Yeah. Do you think the whole parental revelation pays off in the season finale, which we'll be watching next week?
I don't know. Because that was my initial thought as well, is that they're going to set up for maybe a little bit of a splashier finale. I don't think we're looking at a best of both worlds style finale or anything, but I think that would be a fun way to have a little bit of continuity. But at the same time, I don't know, when they had that line about Freeman saying something like, if anyone ever found out, I'd have them like court-martialed or something like that. It almost felt like a way to kind of zip that one off.
I think that they're trying to set something up for the finale. Like, the show has not been super serialized, which I think is to its benefit. I like how, you know, this episode probably would not have hit me as hard had I just dropped in on this, my first viewing. Like, it was kind of the buildup of the character arcs and what's been established before this that I kind of appreciate more, like the big revelation that Mariner is in fact the daughter of Captain Freeman that Boimler just finds out. So I'd be surprised if they set this up and they don't pay it off within one episode.
I think they have to do something, because I don't think you can have scenes where, say, Mariner is fighting with Freeman in a scene and Boimler standing by without acknowledging that this character knows something. It would be very weird if it was just like a blank stare on that character's face.
And by do something, of course, you're talking about retelling that story or reviving that story arc with regards to that orb that went into Freeman's comm badge in like episode two, right?
That's the finale right there.
I can't wait for that payoff.
Speaking of payoff, we got a little more with the character of Billup in this episode.
Yeah.
And
did we?
I had said, I think last week, maybe the week before that, that maybe Billup's thing is that he doesn't have a thing. And I think that is what the show is doing.
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite moment, and it's mostly just a sight gag, but it's when, you know, we have Rutherford look over at him in the bar and he says, "Dude's a stone cold badass." And all you see Billup doing is sipping his pea soup at that moment.
Yes, like that's the whole thing about maybe this character, is that he has no real personality beyond just being a very efficient engineer. But the show will keep referencing him as having a personality, which could be kind of funny.
If that's it, okay, I'll go with it. It just took like a long time for them to establish that for me, as someone who's slow on the uptake many a time. So I don't know. I just, but out of the senior crew, okay, who are you most intrigued by amongst the senior crew? Who do you want to see more often than not?
I'd say Dr. Tan is the one I want to see more of a story built around. They've been using her mostly for just like quick, it seems like swearing moments, or just like she's had some funny moments, but they're very quick. I would like to see an episode where we got to see more of that character.
Do you think part of the reason why is she probably has the most distinct, you know, character, distinct characteristics imbued in her?
Or does Shax's?
Well, I get more comedy out of Dr. Tana than I do, say, Shax. Although that moment where he's saying, like, tell the Paw Wraiths you'll see me in hell or whatever. Like that was like that was probably Shax's like greatest moment of this entire series so far.
Yeah, I mean, like, Shax has a very specific personality that I don't know that you can really do that much more with. Like, I feel like he's better for just quick gags. And it feels like they're using Dr. Tana for that as well. I do think you could do a little more. We've gotten very little of the actual like medical bay and Tendi's efforts there. So yeah. I think you could do something for sure there.
Yeah. Well, I'm always intrigued when we have Dr. Tana on screen. Although, okay, one thing about the Shax gag, I wish he had referenced, instead of hell, he had mentioned the fire caves.
I was going to say that's too obscure, Tyler, but they're making Zahn references.
How many people, like, numerically, Cam, would you estimate in the entire world knows who gets that Zahn reference?
Oh, boy. Of the percentage of viewers, that's like...
Not percentage. I just tell me a sheer number of people that you estimate.
Do you think 100 people got it?
Oh, I was going to be more generous. I was going to say, like,
more. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say probably enough people have read, Memory Alpha or say the Star Trek Encyclopedia from the Okudos, which honestly, I read that thing like 5 times.
Sure.
I would say probably like 10,000 people across, let's be honest, like millions and millions and millions of fans. Like at its height, TNG was like, well, actually, you know what? The best gauge is actually the height of Deep Space Nine, where I think it was Emissary was the highest rated episode ever of any Star Trek since, there's 30 million people watching them back in the TOS era, which any station would kill or any network would kill for 30 million viewers. But I think Emissary got 18 million. So I think that's peak, golden era Star Trek. I think there's at least 18 million like real fans out there. And I think maybe 10,000 of them would be hardcore enough to get the Zahn reference.
I just really want to paint myself in an exclusive club.
Yes. So, okay. So you and I would make up about 2% of this club based on your estimates, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I thought it was fun that they had the aliens reference, but... what made it good, actually, was not the line, which I'm like, okay, that's a really on-the-nose reference, but that they approximated James Horner's score from Aliens through the fight scene. That really had me laughing.
Yeah, no, that was a great moment. Cam, did we bring up signatures in the credits just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, we did, yeah. It was like we made some joke about how they should end the Kelvin verse with Chris Pine and everything signing signatures.
But mere weeks later, we end this episode with like the signatures of the Lower Decks crew. Like these people, like the creators of the show, that they are on our wavelength. Like I have to say.
Okay, so you dropped Ronan the Candle references. They happened shortly after.
Yeah,
we mentioned signatures. It happened shortly after. So what is your next guess for some obscure Star Trek reference that could pop up in the finale or premiere of season 2 or whatever?
Well, Cam, I was speaking about Kira's body, Quark's head, as depicted in Meridian.
Okay. I think Wind Dancer is the one I feel very confident in.
Okay, Wind Dancer, I could believe that. I could believe that. We were talking the other week, though, about like the potential of like another legacy character popping up by the end of the season. Do you think it's pretty much like guaranteed for the finale? Do you think they want to maybe like let the finale stand on its own?
I feel like you have to do something so that your finale does feel maybe a little bit bigger than the average episode. So if it isn't a guest star of, that's a legendary character from the franchise, it's got to be something else that feels fairly big. Maybe even just like an alien species we haven't seen in a long time feature prominently. I don't know, something has to happen in this episode that feels, I think, a little splashy.
Well, the way you described it just now, does that not feel like this episode? Does it not feel like that's what Crisis Point was trying to do in terms of the animation, in terms of the emotional, revelations that came about? Like this almost feels like it could have worked as the season finale if that's what they wanted.
It does, yeah. Like, that's a thing. This would have worked, which makes me think you can't end on a whimper when you have this episode, as the penultimate one.
So it's kind of like the whole C.V. Pakum Parabellum versus Into the Forest We Go sort of dilemma that they had in season 1 of Star Trek Discovery?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Although I will say, Will You Take My Hand, the season 1 finale from Discovery, that was a whimper, save for the elating revelation of the 1701 in the closing 10 seconds of that one.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I could see them working something in, and I don't think they would have teased early on about having legendary, you know, characters pop up on the show, you know, during the press for, I think even before the show aired, if they didn't have a couple. Like, I know they had John DeLancey last week, but I feel like there's probably another one.
Okay. Can you top a John DeLancey moment? Or, like, I just wonder if it might fall flat. I think Quark makes the most sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think Quark is a really good one.
Okay, okay.
The only other thing I could think of is if they, like, had a Shatner one or something that felt maybe a little bit of a surprise.
Sabotage?
Exactly.
It'd be amazing if we do get Shatner saying sabotage in animated form.
That'd be great. And you know what? William Shatner does do a lot of voice work these days. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out at all.
Okay. Okay. Well, I guess, look, if the best we can do is John Rhys-Davies reprising the role of Da Vinci, maybe that's we can look forward to that as well. Shotgun to the face for Mariner, sorry.
Concept of Flight, or whatever that episode was called, part two. Concerning Flight.
Concerning Flight. Okay, Cam, well, you and I had a great time discussing this, but now we want to bring on a very special guest. It is one Taylor Ramone. She is a returning guest. It's going to be great to have her on, so let's turn it over to Taylor now. Already and beaming in with us. It's been a while, but Taylor Ramone back on Subspace Transmissions. Taylor, thank you so much for returning to our show after it's been a bit of a hiatus.
Well, you know, I think there's a good reason for a hiatus. There are interstellar giant viruses attacking everybody, and we needed an EMH to start inoculating us. So,
giant viruses or giant orchids?
Maybe a little bit of both, depending on how sexual you want to get.
Thank you. I know, but Taylor, you were going to be on our Star Trek Picard podcast. I believe it was going to be part one of the finale. I can't even remember the name. Et Arcadia Ego. Okay, there you go. But then we had a global pandemic take hold. We weren't able to get you on before Star Trek Picard wrapped up, but we're so glad to talk to you. It's been like 9 episodes of Lower Decks.
Oh my God, it's been great.
Awesome to have you. What are your initial thoughts on Lower Decks? How are you finding the series as it progresses through this first season?
So I always like to go into every Star Trek series with a fresh point of view, because categorically, sometimes the season ones in each Star Trek can be kind of rocky. So I never want to judge a full Star Trek series based on their season one. I always go into it with an open mind. But I am going to say that I am so far loving everything about Lower Decks. It is just hitting its stride really quickly. I mean, there has been maybe like... the first few episodes, the pacing was maybe a little bit quick, but it's definitely a great comedic show for fans of Star Trek, because it's so explicitly written with so many inside jokes that and deep cuts. So, but I am loving it so far. I'm finding it so refreshing, you know, with all the sort of dark Trek that's been going on. It's just, yeah, I love, you know, and I got to say that I also am a huge fan of animation just in general. So seeing a Star Trek animated series like makes my soul happy. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the best way to describe. I'm really happy with it so far. These are my initial thoughts.
Well, yeah, Cam and I, we were just discussing a couple weeks ago about like what might be the best first season of Star Trek. And I think the big one is the original series. But we were making an argument that it might be like Lower Decks has, you know, a bit of a jump on a lot of these other shows at this point in season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, totally. I was going to say, too, I mean, it's already working in like an established setting. Like, it's not going to anywhere like the future or the past or something that we're not 100% sure of something we've seen already. It's taking place just a few years after Voyager. So we are in the same within the same realm. So the references can be made, and there's just a really good I think it's been a really good way of just, you're able to just get into the show so seamlessly versus some of these other Star Trek series where you have to like really do a lot of like, not necessarily world building because we're familiar with that world already, but there's like, there's a different nuance to each era because it's at a different time period where this is like just barely after the stuff that we're so familiar with to begin with. So I think that that lets it hit its stride a lot more quickly than some other shows. But I gotta say, I mean, gotta go with the first season. You gotta just get through some of these first seasons. It's sometimes a cringy episode, but so far there hasn't been one with Lower Decks. So
it's true. I mean, there hasn't been that real low point. When you look at a lot of the other first seasons, there's usually more than one episode that's really bad. And
yeah,
you sit there and go like, I don't know, this is a show that's even worth watching. Whereas with Lower Decks, you can accuse a couple of them of being mediocre, but I don't think we've had a bad episode.
No.
Wait. Are you saying you do not like Code of Honor from season one of Star Trek The Next Generation?
Well, I'm wearing the shirt right now.
Yes.
We have no way of debating that.
I am curious, though, Taylor, what have been, you know, your favorite episodes of Lower Decks so far? Like, by one, you know, one favorite, or have there been multiple?
It's hard to say. I do really liked what they did in the last one. The most recent one, which was Crisis Point, that aired as of today. But I'm going to just, I have my little wiki open because unfortunately with this season being so new, I don't have all the episode titles memorized. But
how dare you?
There's
how
some
dare
specific
you?
Moments that have really shone. I especially liked Boimler is not quite in phase. I think that's much ado about Boimler.
Yeah.
He's not fully transported. But along with that, there's also the dog that Tendi has made, which is just a great side character. But that, I think that was maybe one of my favorite episodes so far, because they talk about, they go to the what's the planet called? Do you guys know?
Where they call it the farm, I think, right?
The farm, yeah. So everybody ends up at the farm. There's so many great references of like transporter mishaps, some classic Star Trek happening there.
The Captain Pike wheelchairs, and they had like a big group of people in the Pike wheelchairs. That was amazing there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's been my favorite so far. But there's so many great moments, like even when they have they go on the holodeck and they make this creature based off of the insignia. And he's voiced by
Jack McBrayer from 30 Rock fame.
Yeah. And he goes on a murderous rampage, which is perfect. Everything I wanted to happen in a holodeck episode.
I'm a Badgie fan as well.
Huge Badgie fan.
Yeah.
Why is there not Funko Pops of that yet? I mean, they make Funko Pops of everything faster than you can even imagine it. So I would get a Badgie plush at least. Maybe I need to make one.
Let's license Badgie plush dolls. I think we could make lots of money.
Oh, totally.
It feels like they're going to market Lower Deck stuff at conventions a lot once we have conventions and merchandise is actually something people are buying.
Yeah, like Cam, you and I, we talked, like if they ever do like those Eagle Moss, you know, models of the ships, like I would totally get the USS Vancouver and the USS Cerritos as well.
Oh, obviously, yeah. I loved that the USS Vancouver, I know there's a Vancouver, Washington, but it felt like a great nod to all the animation that happens out of Vancouver. So that was like that was such a great special reference for, I think, everybody who lives here. Cause like we've been such an animation hub with these studios who are producing things like Rick and Morty or producing Lower Decks and all this great animations coming out of Vancouver way back into like Reboot back in the day. So even though it may not be a reference to us, I was hoping it was.
I think it is though, because yeah. Lower Decks is animated over at Titmouse Studios here in Vancouver, and they had like little shuttles in the USS Vancouver, and it said like the Kitsilano and and all that. Oh. So it's got to be like Vancouver, BC, right, Taylor?
Oh, it has to be. I mean, I didn't catch that in the initial episode, but that makes me so happy. Titmouse is actually just down the street from where I live right now. So I walk past their studio quite frequently.
Listeners, if you want, I can give you the address, and we'll make sure that you can pass by Taylor's anytime.
You know the big dome in Vancouver? I live approximately near there. So you know what? You might run into me walking my dog. I will probably be wearing so much PPE that you won't recognize me, which is exactly what I want.
True, true.
Yeah.
You'll wear the same PPE that they had in the Borg cube on Star Trek Picard, where it's just like mesh.
Yeah, mesh is coming back this year. So.
Is it?
I know. But you know what? I've seen some pretty wild face people with various what they could think they can get away with face masks, and mesh has been up there. I know.
Taylor, this episode, Crisis Point. You mentioned earlier that you loved it. I'm totally on board with you. I was saying earlier in the episode, this is probably my favorite one so far in season one. Mm-hmm. What was it about it? What strikes you about an episode like Crisis Point?
I think, you know, I resonate a bit with Mariner. I think in this episode, because she's out there, she's feisty, she's doing her own thing and refusing to go to therapy and try to solve her problems her own way. And actually, right before this, I had a therapy session, and then I watched the episode, and I'm like, well, that's so funny. And it was again maybe my first one ever. So it aligned with my own personal worldview. But that is something entirely I would do to get away with not actually working through my problem, finding a different, entirely new way to work through my problem. But it was a great episode for so many references to the Star Trek movies. My favorite part of it was the 8,000 shots of the Cerritos with all the lens flares and all the crew just looking at it. And then that went on for so long, but it was such a great reference to and like homage to all the great Star Trek movies that there have been.
We didn't touch on it, but they totally went with the J.J. Abrams lens flares whenever they were on the bridge as well.
They did, and also there was a moment where they're going to warp, and you see from the very back of the nacelles, like, the crackling energy, and that was from Star Trek, I believe, Into Darkness.
Mm-hmm. So, this really was, like, a total homage to, like, kind of the cinematic universe. What did you think, though, Taylor, of, say, the crash landing as it's been depicted at least, like, three times in Star Trek movies?
Yeah, of course, that's a very classic move to happen. The whole saucer section just flies off and crashes somewhere. But I think there was like even that moments that were like homages, like, it, you know, fighting inside the derelict ship and things like that. That's such a, I think that happens with Into Darkness as well. If I'm remembering that correctly, I might have my Star Kelvinverse movies mixed up.
I think it's
up.
Star Trek Beyond, in which they were kind of like battling.
Oh, there
like
we
the,
go.
Yeah. So
I unfortunately have somehow they've all been lumped together in my brain as like one big movie. So, but yeah, there was a lot of just great, great cinematic moments that were about that. And it's such a love letter to, the Star Trek movie franchises out there. So I think it was something that like felt warm and fuzzy while like having a really good story, especially with that awesome spoiler at the end that I was not expecting.
Now, how impressed have you been as someone who is a fan of animation with what this show has been doing with animation? Like this episode in particular, I thought was absolutely incredible.
Yes. So actually, fun fact about me as an animation fan, I went to animation school very briefly. But as a somebody who's still been heavily invested in like the medium, I think that I'm always a fan of what animation can do for storytelling. Because it is a more cost effective way to set things in like very fantastical worlds. And also be able to create these incredible silly scenarios along with it. So I am a huge fan of what that can do for a sci-fi franchise like Star Trek. I mean, it has precedent, obviously. There is the original animated series. But there's so much more you can do with storytelling, I feel like, in an animated medium versus in a physical medium where you don't need to add, you know, spend tens and thousands of dollars on special effects, which are, again, probably done in Vancouver. But I am just thoroughly impressed what they continue to do and push the envelope with the animation, especially when it comes to, you know, working inside a space like a holodeck and providing that like sort of 3D feeling, because I know there were certain points with like the text flying through the I was so just impressed on like how they created that feeling of that 3D space there. But I think there's especially seeing Star Trek this way is really, really, I think it animation for this just works. You know, you want something lighthearted, you want something you know, where you can still have a character driven story and you can still have those touch points. And I think it's a really good way to mix the two and also create these really great fantastical worlds and create an immersive setting.
I think an episode like this would not necessarily translate to a Star Trek Picard, which maybe I can broach this with you. Taylor, what were your thoughts? We wish we had you on the show back in season one of Picard a couple months ago, but what was your takeaway from Star Trek Picard?
So, you know, growing up,
the
big
sigh.
Generous sigh, because we've
I think
had...
she feels the same way as we do, Cam, but Taylor.
Well, okay. So, you know, I live with Carmen and we're both huge Star Trek fans and we watch Picard together. And we both had different takeaways from it because on the one hand, going back and having a character like Picard feels so exciting and familiar because, you know, my first Star Trek series was TNG growing up. So seeing reviving this character in a new setting in the future, past a point that, you know, storytelling in the Prime universe that we've seen, that's exciting and it felt really good. But on the other hand, like the characterization sometimes seemed maybe a little bit off, or it seemed, you know, it was a very dark show and a lot of people were having a lot of problems all the time. And I don't mind conflicted characters, that makes them deepen. But there's also sometimes that sort of some of that missing element of that a lot of Star Trek has, where you have that like wonderment in it. So there's I feel like it was okay. But again, keeping in mind that the first season of every show can be a little bit off. I was a huge fan of the storyline with Data. I think that was great. But there was so many things where I was like, the world building was a little bit odd, I found. But maybe I'm not.
Wait,
I haven't
wait.
Heard your.
You don't enjoy watching Icheb get his eyeballs ripped out of his face while he's still alive?
Oh my god! I was very disturbed after watching.
Yes,
that.
The show just seemed miserable to like me and Cam. Like we were just like we kept saying like, why are we watching this? Like it's just and like the creators kept trying to telegraph to us like, this ain't your daddy's Star Trek. But I'm just like, well, can't you be subversive in storytelling as opposed to the execution? And like, I don't think dropping F-bombs and depicting like brutal violence makes Star Trek hip and cool. And this is why I'm really loving Lower Decks at this point.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Like, you know, I think Lower Decks does swear. So I think that does lend to like more of a mature thing. And I get that sometimes animation can be really like construed as a medium for children and where it can offer so much more as a medium for like adult storytelling. So I don't mind the swearing. I get that in like, you know, if this was, I get that the standards were different, obviously, with what was happening on TV and, you know, having like F-bombs in Discovery is kind of funny when it happens or things like this. I don't care. I don't mind it. I think it's, you know, it's very, it makes it a little bit more human in a show that's very, very fantastical. But in Star Trek Picard, it was like, it was pretty miserable at some times. And I don't think that a lot of that darkness was enhanced the story, you're saying. The Icheb eyeball thing was horrific. Like, I don't want to watch Voyager and then go see it and like and be like, oh, Icheb, quote, a great character, and then like, oh, and now we have Star Trek Picard, he's dying on this table in a, like a very brutal, vicious way, and I'm like, this is unnecessary, this could have been off screen. And that, you know, there's a level of hinting at something that maybe, oh, maybe Chip survived. And that maybe that's something that needs to be incorporated a little bit more. But yeah, some of it was a little, yeah.
Masochistic, right?
Like, yeah, a little bit too much. But I mean, it was nice seeing some of the characters again. It was nice seeing.
Yeah, like Ichab.
Not Ichab, maybe. Like.
I think Cam and I, we both, and Cam, I don't want to speak on your behalf, but we both loved the farewell scene between Data and Picard. I that to me was,
that was great.
Total highlight of the entire season.
Yeah. I mean, that scene worked really well. It just, everything that built up around it was, not quite as sturdy.
Yeah. I think that did provide like good closure for the sort of Data Picard storyline that has been like, you know, that nobody ever felt fully sat. I don't think anybody ever felt fully satisfied after Data dying and sacrificing himself and having before in the movies. Like, I don't think anybody ever felt like that was fully terminated. And there was like a bit of it in the comics as well. And yeah, I think that this definitely at least helps tie it up and provide like that closure for fans. Data's not coming back. This is what happened to him, you know. But I do find that like the end and what happened to Picard and him taking that sort of, you know, android body, I kind of guessed it like 3 episodes down before it happened. It was definitely super predictable. And you know, it's supposed to be a big reveal.
But like when we find out that like real Picard dies, did you care at all?
I mean, no, because like, it was
you're
sad and everybody's crying and you're like, well, they're just going to give him that damn android body. You know what's happening. You're like, why am I feeling like it's actually just get on with it.
I did enjoy watching Elnor cry. That was comedic gold for me.
Getting back to like Lower Decks though, and kind of jumping off of characters, I'm just really curious because you said Mariner was a character you really dug on the show. I'm curious about your thoughts on some other characters that have really popped out for you on Lower Decks.
Mariner is like I do like Mariner because she's a type of character that we haven't really seen who is like, you know, she does go against the rules and she doesn't always do everything Starfleet style, but she is still like a really competent officer. And then we have her foil, which is Boimler, which is another great character because you do see he's like everything that they have sold Starfleet to be, and he's trying to be everything by that book. And you have, and they work so well together. So I'm really enjoying that dynamic. As for other characters, I am really a huge fan of the security officer. I can't find his name.
Shax.
Shax.
The Bajoran.
Yeah, I like this big, burly Bajoran officer, like, you know, instead of saying, like, hell and demons, he's like, tell the pirates I said hi, and leaves. So I've enjoyed seeing this, because you see, like, you know, Bajorans, while they are fighters, are definitely, you know, they're spiritual people.
Would you wear Shax's earring if a piece of his ear was still on it?
How would you get it in? I don't think it would work with my spacers, but I would at least, you know, would I be Bajoran in that universe? And would I follow their religion? Probably not. So,
put a little saline solution on. It'll be okay, right?
Yeah, but it does. It is a good fashion statement. I do think, as for jewelry goes in the Star Trek universe.
Okay. Well, excellent. Like, Taylor, thank you so much for joining us. Like, we've been digging Lower Decks. It's great that you kind of feel the same way. I'm not shocked that you're on the same page as me and Cam when it comes to Star Trek Picard either. We're hopeful for season 2 of Picard, but we're very skeptical. But one thing that we are looking forward to very much in just a few weeks is Star Trek Discovery season 3. Have you watched like any of the trailers or what are your thoughts about the potential for season 3?
Well, I'm hopeful in every Star Trek series that we see more Andorians. But I'm actually looking forward to seeing this future, because like we've talked about on a couple podcasts, or like a couple times I've guested, you know, I never felt that Discovery needed to really be a prequel, and now here we are in the future, and it's a sequel, you know, essentially for all intents and purposes. So I'm excited to see what they do with that. And what is beyond the universe that we've known so far. So I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Well, hopefully we can get you on to give your thoughts on at least an episode or two of Discovery Season 3, because yeah, we'd like to get some more guest input, because you know, Tyler and I are getting tired of each other.
It's only been 6 years.
You know, it's bound to happen, like in any relationship, podcasting or otherwise.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be on. I'm not literally not going anywhere, so I'm available, surprisingly.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, Taylor, thank you again.
Thanks so much. And if we talk about Lower Decks again, I will be sure to have everybody's names fully memorized.
Awesome.
By the end of it.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
It's going to be the season finale of Lower Decks Season 1. I cannot wait to see where they go to next, Cam. Maybe a legacy character makes an appearance. We'll have to see.
Oh, we can see. We will see very shortly, and I'm very excited to see it. Okay.
Bring back O'Brien.
O'Brien. Oh, maybe.
The most
important
man in Starfleet history.
Obviously.
Okay. You can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in very delicious lizard people. Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTT, as in Toby Targ, ON.
And what about you, Taylor?
You can find me on social media at Tay Ramon 69, aka the best number, including Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on the Adventure EXE podcast and the What the Quest live stream. If you want to catch up on either of those podcasts or live streams, you can hit up TayRamon69.com for any of those links.
I guess I'm going to go to Urban Dictionary once again, Cam, and find out why this is the best number.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.